Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, this is Danny speaking. You're listening to Gamertag Radio, brand new episode here, and this one's a special one. We have a couple, well, only one guest, because the other one's just going to lay back and chill.
Should I say who it is?
You could give him a shout out.
I'm going to give a shout out to the person who's not here right now,
yeah,
which is PS4 Trophies, yeah, aka Brian, whose last name I won't say, because I don't know if people know your last name. I know your last name. I know your last name.
Nobody knows it.
I will say it.
I don't say it.
All right, I will not say it then.
So tell us, man. Adam, introduce yourself, man.
All right. So to people who don't know me, which is probably the majority of you, I'm a YouTuber. I've been working on multiple channels for many years. Currently, I'm mostly focused on my own channel, which is just my name, Adam Korlick, and where I do a lot of video game content. And actually, this year, I'm celebrating 10 years of doing that. So
dope. That's cool.
Been around.
What, January? Was it January?
Well, it will be later this year, like November-ish.
See, for us,
so it's like technically.
For us, is next month.
Oh, congratulations.
14 for us, yeah.
Congrats,
we're old farts, man. Yeah. 14 years of podcasting, yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah. And so we were
where
at
are you
an
going?
Event. It's okay. Right.
That's a cameo.
So yeah, we were hanging out at a bar arcade because, you know, we were at an event a week and a half ago. Yeah. So I was like, oh, let's just go to the bar arcade. We're hanging out. And then we started playing some old school systems there. They had the NES. I think they had a Xbox 360. A couple of games.
It's sad we live in a world where Xbox 360 is considered old school.
Yeah, I mean it is.
It is. Launched in 2005.
Yeah, it's been over 10 years.
Yeah, no, it's creepy, man.
Yeah. So then we start talking about Sega.
Oh yeah, I'm wearing the hoodie right now.
Yeah, I see. And you mentioned, dude, I'm like the biggest hardcore Sega fan out there. And we start talking about Sega Genesis and one of my all time favorite systems ever, the Sega Dreamcast.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, man, Adam, I want you to be on the show, man, because I'm a huge Sega Dreamcast fan. That was the system. Mm-hmm. Besides Super Nintendo, I think Super Nintendo changed my life completely, but Sega Dreamcast,
yeah,
was the reason why I started internet radio because of Phantasy Star Online.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I bought the console 9/9/99.
Me too.
So
I had KB Toys.
I got a GameStop at that time. Yeah. It was life changing for me, man. So, mm-hmm, what was it that stood out to you about Sega Dreamcast that became a hardcore fan of that?
First,
of that console.
I'm going to completely agree with your point. I am very pro Sega. Do you have your phone on you? I want you to see something.
Yeah, I have a phone. So, somewhere charging, I think.
Oh,
but yeah, go.
All right. Well, my point was going to be, yeah, Google Sega's Bay.
Sega's Bay.
As in babe, you know. I will come up.
Really?
From them. That's my title for working with them.
Wow.
Is Sega's Bay. Yes, I'm very pro Sega. But more specifically to answer your question, the Dreamcast to me was, I mean, I was at a different age range at that time because I'm 32 now. So I would have like 12-ish when it was coming out.
Okay. And I was in my early 20s.
Yes.
Early 20s.
So basically my story with it was I grew up in the Genesis era. Like that was my thing. But, you know, when the Dreamcast was coming out, I was kind of in that like middle school phase and there was like this lull in games. Like I didn't own a 32X. I didn't own a Sega CD. I didn't even know the Sega Saturn existed. So to me, it went from Genesis to they just were gone. And all of a sudden the Dreamcast was like, Sega's back. And there was just kind of this like pull and this charm to it. Then it ended up having this amazing launch and there was all these great games and it was just so much fun. And I just kind of ended up falling in love with it to the point now I'm like, I have every game ever produced for that console.
Even the new ones that came out years later, right?
Yeah. Those, oh, yeah. I'm in one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Zia and the Goddess of Magic. I'm an NPC in it. If you come up to me in the game, I have no useful information. All that happens is I talk about Shenmue and have you heard of, like, do you like my beard or something like that. But yeah, like all the guys who are still making new Dreamcast games, like I know all of them. I'm kind of their go-to. Like anytime it's like, hey, we need like, you know, a video about our new game. Like let's get that one nerd who's always talking about it. Like, yeah. So like I actually just got a new one. I was in New York like when we, the trials thing.
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, when I was there, I went to went over to Video Games in New York, and they hooked me up with a copy of Fade to Black, which is a brand new Dreamcast game.
Nice.
So point is, yes, I love that console. I'm very associated with it.
You played, you tried Sega Channel? Because I have back in the days.
No, man. By the time I had a Genesis, that didn't even exist anymore.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, that's what I was told.
But see, that was like they were ahead of this time, man. When it comes to with the Dreamcast online and Sega Channel, to me, it was like Netflix back in the 90s. Yep.
Yeah, for possibly in case your audience doesn't know, basically what he just said is the greatest description ever. You had this service. You would connect like a cartridge to the console. You'd plug it into like your television cable wiring system.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you had this like OS that just had like every game available for the Genesis, and you would just download them, play them that way, and then you just flash it again and just keep going and going. It was just a subscription service.
Yeah,
and kind of like what Game Pass is for Xbox.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the same thing. In 93.
And I remember at that time too, you would go and they will have drawings that people will send to Sega, and I don't know how they will convert that into like 16-bit Sega Genesis style.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so you could check it out, like, and you could read like what people are like messages like from fans from all over the US and stuff. So that was pretty cool. Really cool.
I wish I had seen it.
Yeah.
We were briefly talking about this before the show. My first console should have been Sega Genesis. You know, when I was a kid, I was bugging my mom for that or Super Nintendo. And she just whips out this old Atari 2600. She's like, yeah, that's the same thing. Like, they're all video games. You can play that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
All my friends are playing on the Sega Channel. I never got to see it. It was discontinued before I ever had the chance.
What was your first online game for the Sega Dreamcast? For me, it was Choo Choo Rocket for me.
No, sad part about that, I never had the chance to play it online.
Never really?
I only was limited to the 56K, and I tried. I could never really get it to work. And by the time I was like older, you know, and could probably have figured it out, it was discontinued. So I don't know if you know this. You know, a lot of those games are back online now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll definitely talk about that.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So you know how I managed to play online with Sega Dreamcast back then? I used NetZero.
Back
then. So what I was doing, I know that when NetZero, you only have a certain amount of time, like 30 to 40 minutes, and then it will hang up and have to reconnect to the game, especially Phantasy Star Online. Because the first game, there was no monthly subscription. It was just the game was free.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember that game, they had a lot of extra quests available only for the Japanese version. And not for the US version. So I was doing all that all the time. And then I'm like, guys, I only have like 5 minutes. It's about to disconnect. It would disconnect. I'll go. So we had a community of people that figured out how to get free online. And now there was a lot of services that was charging a lot at that time, you know. But NetZero was the reason I was playing that game so many times, man. A lot.
Yeah, that name is such a blast from the past, man.
You remember American Online with the free disc?
Oh, dude, right? I still have a million of those like sitting in some drawer somewhere.
Yeah.
Because they were just hilarious.
Well, I'm thinking of all the games too. Alien Front Online was pretty cool.
Yeah.
NFL 2K1, I was like, wow, that was crazy.
Alien Front Online, I have one interesting story about. Now, possibly the person who's in this room with us who won't speak might remember this.
Okay.
Did you remember Disney Quest? Do you ever hear of that name?
Yeah, I remember Disney.
So
yeah.
There was one in Chicago, and there was one, I think, in Orlando. I don't know about the one in Orlando, but the one
It doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
But the one in Chicago, actually, most of its games were done by Sega. And you would go inside, and there was this one. By the way, Disney Quest was basically Disney's attempt to make a virtual theme park with just video games. But so they had this big setup for this game that was Alien Front Online, where you would just get in a big like VR setup, and that's how I played Alien Front Online.
Oh, for the first time? Okay.
It was bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, it was amazing. And then, you know, coming back from to the Dreamcast version with just like the little mic, I was like, oh. But that like set the bar to an unrealistic high. But
think about it. That was the first time I used voice chat in the game.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember going on, I'll be like, hey, what's up, everyone? And then you hear an echo on the TV, hey, what's up, everyone? Like, seconds later, it will pop up.
Nobody's used to it yet.
Yeah. But, hey, for something in 56K online, that was pretty freaking amazing, man.
Yeah, the Dreamcast had a lot of tech that was way ahead, like, or Sega in general. Like, the Dreamcast had a webcam. We'll never seem to know that.
And they had the Ethernet.
They had a broadband and broadband, late, but it was there.
Yeah.
Or this is not Dreamcast specifically, but the Sega Saturn. all of its online games, which, yes, it had online games, are still functional because they were all peer-to-peer.
Did you know that? I didn't know that. Yeah, I didn't know that. I never purchased a Saturn.
Same at the time. I have them now, but like at the time, yeah. I didn't know. So, but there was like three games that were online able, and then they had a special cartridge, and they were all peer-to-peer. So to this day, 2019, you can play online with a Saturn.
That's cool.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's very weird, especially now with the Dreamcast. I know there was people that figure out a way to play not all the games, but a lot of them you can play on now online. So for those that are wondering how I can play this online, like, is it an easy process? I know when the first time I heard about it, I heard it was a little bit difficult, but now they made it easier.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. To be honest with you, I haven't tried to do it myself.
Okay.
I do know that it has brought a lot of the ones that people wanted. Like, I know, I'm pretty sure Quake 3 is back online.
Quake 3, PSO.
PSO is the one everyone wants, but yeah. They brought some random ones back, like Maximum Pool. And then one that was a European exclusive called Planet Ring, which was interesting because that one only worked online. If you didn't have an online connection, you would get this little hub and then it would fail and that was it. But that game exists again because of that service. Again, I've never personally tried to dive into the technical part. But the idea that you can do it is amazing. I know
it was easier. Dreamcast Live, I think it's called, or something like that. People could go and you can see how many, something like either Sega Live or Dreamcast Live.
It used to be Sega Live.
Yeah, one of those two.
Yeah.
But I know you go to those websites.
SegaNet,
the old one.
Yeah, that was the old one.
So when you go to this website, you select the game and it'll tell you how many people are actually playing online in those games. And I think you can add people, contact, start playing with them and everything.
You would have to, because these days, not too many people are randomly going to be looking for matches. So you got to have to like coordinate. But still, I'm just as excited as you are because of the idea that people actually care enough to keep that going is awesome to me.
What do you think that... There's still so many people that love this system so much that they can't, honestly, like, to me, I always mentioned to you, I've been mentioning a couple of times that this is like one of my favorite consoles of all time. And at that time when I think PlayStation 2 was coming out, the reason why, in my opinion, Sega failed was that DVD player, man, because the majority of the people that are not gamers, they're like, oh, yeah, man, so I could buy this, watch movies, and I could let my kids play games. And for this price, oh, I'm going to buy it. Sega was making great games, but they never pushed the level like had online better than anything. I think even Bleem was trying to release for the Sega Dreamcast. Yeah, but I think they got sued and then got stopped. And they looked it better than the original PlayStation games.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah, yeah. So why do you think that there's so much fan that still can't let it go, man?
There's a lot to unpack in that question. Yeah. But okay. So first part of that question is, why do people miss it, right? I would say there's a few different reasons for that. One, my buddy Shane, Rerez TV, another YouTuber, possibly you've heard of him. He always says that this the best, I think, which is most consoles that fail because they're bad. They fail because people think the Amiga CD32, like, who cared? You know, like, whatever. But the Dreamcast failed at its prime when it had nothing but great games. Sega did maybe 98% of everything right with it. They just ran out of money. That's what killed them. So everyone has this nostalgic vibe of like, wow, everything was so good about this console. Like, imagine if the Sega Genesis or the Super Nintendo had shut down only like 2 years into it, even though everything else was the same. You'd just be like, why did you stop? That was so good. And that's kind of the connection it had, I think, with so many people was just, why did you stop? To the point where people can't even forgive that it stopped because like I was just pointing out, we still get new games for the Dreamcast even in 2019.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've had a new game for the Sega Dreamcast every single year except for, I think, 2011, every year since 1998.
And does it sell a lot or not really? Or?
Enough that they keep doing it. I mean, I can't give any details here, but like I got an email not too long ago from one of the guys who's publishing a bunch of games. He gave me this long list of all the stuff that they're working on. I'm like, dude, like they're amping it up. It's actually increasing now. Mm-hmm. And like nostalgia is powerful, man.
So let's say somebody wants to buy those new games that came out. Is it like independently?
Independently published. These days, how it typically works is there's just a handful of guys who are actually producing the games. And they typically sell it through a couple of different outlets. Am I cool to shout
out? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Video Games New York is probably the most prominent
there.
One.
I've been there, really awesome.
But yeah, it is a cool store. And Dan's an awesome guy. And also his website, of course. The BitStation is also one of the big proponents of it. And then there's a couple of guys who try to do it on their own, but often they'll cut deals and release them through those outlets because those are just the biggest ones. But you'll also see them on like PlayAsia.
PlayAsia, yeah.
Yeah, PlayAsia will sell a lot of them too. Mm-hmm. So you'd be amazed where you can get those.
Do you think the reason why Sega ran out of money was because of Shenmue?
No.
No, because a lot of people think it's because of Shenmue. That was a very expensive game.
Let's break down Shenmue as far as budget. Because the thing that everybody puts out there is that Shenmue had this ridiculous inflated budget of like, I think it's always quoted as like $79 million.
Something like that, yeah.
And the reason people think that is because Sega America's marketing team had no idea what this game was. I've even been told that by a former guy at Sega at E3 last year, actually. This dude walked up to me and he was like, oh, I hated working on that game, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, point is, they didn't know what that game was. All they knew is it was expensive. So they said, I don't know, double it and claim that's what it costs so that we can make everyone think there's this really big expensive game that didn't cost nearly what it did. In reality, the budget was $47 million, which is still insane until you break that down further. $47 million included the budget not only for game development, but publication and promotion of Shenmue 1, 2, the ill-fated Shenmue RPG, or a Virtua Fighter RPG, and the Sega Saturn version of Shenmue.
Didn't they have like a Shenmue Online too?
That was a different project that never came out. It was supposed to be an MMORPG that came out, or was supposed to come out in like 2004, 2005 in like South Korea only.
Yeah.
Really weird. But the point I'm making is $47 million was a budget for four games, two of which were ever released, and also included all the marketing and publication. So when you break down the actual game development budget, Shenmue 3, which was mostly Kickstarter funded, has about the same development budget.
Really?
Isn't that?
That's kind of crazy.
That game did not break Sega. What broke Sega was, I forget his name, but there was a Japanese guy. I want to say it was like, not a WoW, but something. I forget his name. Mm-hmm. But this dude was like the primary financier of Sega. And he kept it going. He had such passion for that. He dumped almost, I think it was like $900 million of personal funds just to keep them going for a year or two. Mm-hmm. And then he died. And 2 weeks later, they discontinued everything. Because without that. Without
the money, yeah.
Yeah, without the money.
Was he an older?
Yeah, he was an older guy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But he just loved that company. He was just so passionate about it. It's actually a very sad story. I mean, but without him, they would never even have gotten that far. Because really what did Sega in, because you briefly mentioned like why did it go away? It all came back to the Saturn and the 32X and the Sega CD and basically the market distrust that they had created for themselves over the span of a few years and failed hardware. The Dreamcast, in my opinion, as great as it was doomed from the get-go. Like, you could have done everything right, and they basically did, and still really never had a chance. Unless that guy had just kept living indefinitely.
Yeah, because I thought the whole time, I thought it was because of a combination of Shenmue plus PlayStation. So I thought it was that.
None of those things did them favors. You know, Shenmue, in a sense, you can argue that to an extent, but at the same time, it became the most iconic game on the console. The impending PlayStation 2 definitely hurt sales. There's no dispute about that. But I mean, that's normal competition.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't argue that it's unfair that the Dreamcast died because its competitor decided to compete with it. It's not reasonable. We don't blame the GameCube or the Xbox. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They got their asses handed to them too by the PlayStation 2. Everybody did. Mm-hmm. But that's a factor. Piracy was a factor, a small factor, but a factor. Mostly, it just came down to we just don't have enough market trust to self-fund. We basically were almost relying on the donations of one guy to keep everything running. That's a house of cards that eventually fell.
Yeah. So what were you when you heard the news? Okay, Sega Dreamcast is done. That's it.
No more.
Shenmue 2 is not coming out here in the States, but it's available in Europe. Yeah. All these other games. It's coming out for the original Xbox and so on. Like, where were you at the moment?
That was a bad day.
Okay.
I was at his house. I just spent the night there. I woke up and he said that. He's like, dude, I'm just they're not doing Dreamcast anymore. And we were both big fans of it. And I was like, no, that's not true. Walk in, there's this big like old like IGN type of article or whatever, and says it there. And it was like, wow. But what happened was That story was about how Sega's not producing hardware anymore. And that one turns out to be a big mistranslation. Now, there was this guy, I think he was at IGN. I don't remember his name. But even if I did, I don't know if it would be.
This was like an early 2001, 2000
yeah.
around.
Yeah. There. So basically what happened is this one dude, I think it was IGN, was interviewing one of the guys at Sega of Japan. And there was a translation issue. He was asking him, like, you know, what's going on? And the Japanese dude responded with something like, you know, everything's okay. We're not currently producing units. And he just meant, like, we have enough pre-built units that we don't need to make more. Mm-hmm. And the dude misinterpreted that as we're giving up hardware. And then when he posted that, that was pretty much the end. Because technically he was right, but that wasn't meant to go public anywhere near that early. So you already had stagnant sales, and then combining with now the entire market factor, people are like, all right, I guess they're done. I'm not even, there's no point.
Mm-hmm.
It was doomed, man. It was just doomed.
Yeah, I think that when I heard that the Xbox was coming, I was like, wait, okay, so this could be the Dreamcast for Sega, you know? Mm-hmm. So were you happy that they said, okay, we're going to start working on games on our competition?
Oh, like, no. No, who would be?
Yeah, but I'm saying that was kind of weird seeing a Sega game playing on a Nintendo console, you know, like.
You know what was really weird is when a few years ago I realized Sonic the Hedgehog has been a third-party mascot longer than he was a first-party mascot.
Wow, that is pretty sad.
Because he was a first-party mascot from 91 to 2001.
Yeah.
And since 2001, think about, yeah, right? You got a reaction out of Brian.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
That is pretty sad, man.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he was only, Sega really only, and Sonic was only on hardware for 10 years.
Oh, man, that sucks, man. Yeah. Now, another conversation we brought up was about Shenmue. You said you're a huge fan of Shenmue.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, and I know you're excited about 3.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Where were you when they announced Shenmue? Well, you said, I kind of knew.
No, I didn't know shit about Shenmue 3.
Oh, you did it. No. So it was a total surprise.
The re-release I was heavily involved in. Shenmue 3, I had no knowledge.
No knowledge. Okay.
Shenmue 3, so the story with that is where I was. That was 2015. I was not at E3 that year. I was at home. And there was some, you know, rumors that that was going to be the case. And I was like, you know, like this happens every year in the Shenmue community. But my girlfriend actually convinced me. She's like, just watch the stream because you know, and I was like, all right, fine. So I'm going to watch it. And then she tried to talk me into like live streaming it and having my reactions. I was like, why? It's pointless. Never regretted anything so much in my life. Because of course
I was actually there, close to the stage.
I'm envious, man. As soon as you saw that announcement, and there was a couple of announcements prior to it that really screwed with you, because there was like the Final Fantasy announcement. Which was like, this is something, you know, fans have been clamoring for years, and all of a sudden, no, it's not that. Then there was this other one where a leaf fell, and I was like, oh, that's just like what happens to Shenmue, and it was like a completely different thing. I was like,
yeah,
you dicks. Like, but then they combined the two, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
I remember after that was over, I was running around my apartment like a lunatic, and my girlfriend was on, you know, on Skype and like trying to calm me down. She's like, you're losing your shit. You gotta relax.
It shut down. Kickstarter wasn't even working.
They broke the records, like all the records of the day.
Yeah.
As soon as I could like function, I just ran over and filmed a video, and I fangirled like I've never in my life. And I posted this video like almost immediately. And that was an insane.
Are you worried about the game? Do you think it's going to...
I mean...
Because it's tricky for a game like that from back then to come back. Like, what I mean, I haven't... The stuff that I've been hearing is they had the game. It was okay. They needed a lot of work. That's why the game got delayed. That was what I heard. I don't know if it's true.
My answer to that is always...
Yeah.
Yu Suzuki took his time to make the first two games. I mean, that game was in development since like 94 originally. In my position, in you, I trust, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to let that man make his vision, let it take as long as he needs. And when he delivers a product, he says, this is what it is. Hopefully it's good. But worried? No. But at the same time, am I sitting here be like, no guys, it's going to be the best game ever.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I'm not delusional. It could be Phantom Menace. I have no idea, but I hope it's not.
Yeah. Are you excited? Besides that, did you put money down right away too? Right, yeah.
Okay.
There was a controversy about the way how they announced it,
which was
why let's say Sony support the game, put money down. Maybe they could have like as an exclusive. If they've done that for other companies, why announce this as a Kickstarter at a PlayStation press conference? That was I put money down. I didn't even care. I just want the game.
Right.
But a lot of the controversy, everybody was talking about that online, on Twitter, it was social media.
Economic reality. No company wanted to take the dive on that. And that situation, I think, was meant to put an end to it all. I think, I don't know this, I don't work with any of them, but I think, if I had to guess, that situation was meant to just test the waters to see, A, does this fan base really exist? Or B, do we just kill this franchise permanently? Because let's pretend, like they said that their goal was $2 million, and that was just the basic budget goal. If it had failed to meet even its most basic budget goal, you have no argument left for a Shenmue 3. Yeah. Now, it smashed it because it proved that there was this audience. But why didn't Sony fund it? Probably the same reason Sega never did and nobody else ever wanted to, which was we don't trust that this franchise has money in it.
Yeah, but see, they started that buzz. Now they have an opportunity to shop it. Like, look at the buzz. Look at the audience. Look how many people already put money down. And that's when now Deep Silver, they're the publisher of the game. Yep. So they're ready. I think that was smart. You know, it's not a PlayStation publisher or whatever, but I think it's good.
Ultimately, it's good. I believe it was the right move because you just had to prove the market was real. And they did that. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, yes, your money went to fund the game, but you're also getting the game. So.
All right.
It's like buying it.
I don't know if you're allowed, before we wrap it up, I don't know if you're allowed or not. Do you have any crazy stories that a lot of people don't know about, like Sega? Because you have a lot, but ones?
But there's some
one or NDA. Two, one or two, I don't know, like interesting ones. The ones that you'd be like, okay, well, I heard about this.
You'd be amazed what I know about them, but I can't.
You can't.
Do it.
Okay. Because just a few minutes ago, we were talking, you're like, oh, yeah, someone that used to work for Sega at that time. Yeah, okay. Time.
Well, you know, that's not NDA because that was just weird.
Okay.
So at E3 last year, I'm filming this video with Corey Marshall. He's the voice of Ryo Hazuki.
Shout out to Corey.
Yeah. And also with Liesl Wilkerson. She voiced numerous characters like Shuying and Joy and a few others in the English dub of Shenmue 2. And so what the whole premise of the video was I had them play their characters and just interact with people there or outside the Sega booth and stuff and just see what kind of comedic reactions you get. And while we're filming all this, this one dude's just staring daggers at me. Some like older gentleman, didn't know who he was. He's just staring. I thought maybe he watched the channel. Maybe he knew what was going on, whatever. And I'm wearing this shirt that says Shenmue on it. And after I'm done with whatever I was doing, the dude walks in and he's like, why are you wearing a Shenmue? And I was like, oh, you know, we're filming this video and stuff for the game, you know. And he's like, he goes, that effing game. And I was like,
wow.
Yeah. And he goes, he's like, why would you do anything with that? And I was like, well, you know, we're making a video because the re-release is coming up and everything. And we're excited about the Shenmue 3. And he's like, there was a 2? And I was like, yeah. He's like, and then he just broke down. He's like, I worked at Sega when Shenmue 1 was coming out,
Yeah.
And he's like, we didn't understand that game at all. And I was like, it totally explains all the marketing they did originally. He's like, we looked at some of the stuff. We're like, there's a girl in it. So we put her in all the ads because we didn't know what else to do, which is why there's this old Shenmue promo in for North America where this guy like wakes up and he's just talking to his girlfriend. He's like, Nozomi. And it looks like he's cheating on her or something, thinking about – like that's all they knew is like, oh, the girl in this game's attractive. Market it around her. And I was like, wow, that's so like
– wow.
Did you just try playing it?
But are they even gamers? Because that happened in every company. There's people that start working for other gaming companies and they don't know jack about gaming.
Yeah.
So they're just depending on whatever the developers give them, like the access. You
exactly.
Know?
So, it was a different era too. I mean –
Damn, that's crazy.
And he was also telling me, he's like, yeah, I remember we had to sit in this meeting with Yu Suzuki once and he's going on about how he wants to do a whole thing with flowers. And I was like, I got to quit or something like that. And I was like, yeah, that happens in Shenmue too. So that was a fascinating conversation. That wasn't NDA at all because that just happened to me some guy who used to work there. But
yeah, there was so my cousin, she's married to a well-known graffiti artist in Miami. His name is Abstract. So he knows a lot of graffiti artists from around the world. So he's cool with one graffiti artist that used to work with Sega back around like the 90s during the Sega Dreamcast days. So he was the one involved with getting a lot of graffiti artists to do the images for Jet Set Radio.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so he has like a crazy, crazy, crazy story too. I'm dying to interview him. He lives in the UK.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm probably going to get him because I want to hear like behind the scenes working at Sega, you know? So yeah, definitely. That's cool.
Yeah.
Really cool, man. So anything else? That's it, right? You want to promote? Oh, whatever. You want to mention one more story? No, if you have any other
questions, I mean, I'm here for you. So you tell me, but... Yeah. I mean, there's so many things I want to say.
Yeah, but like, you can't.
No, I can't.
Yeah, I know.
I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
Yeah,
including myself.
Are you happy? Okay, I have one more question. So, I know they had a list of like the games that people want to see to come back again from Sega. I was very surprised seeing Jet Set Radio as number one.
Jet Set Radio is now super high on the list because Shenmue's gone. Shenmue got re-released. So yeah, now the entire fan base is like, all right, well,
but come I on. Was expecting like Phantasy Star Online to be up there. I was like, I love Jet Set Radio. I love the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I got both one and two. But I was very surprised seeing that as number one. What are your thoughts?
I'm not surprised. Like I said, with Shenmue now being off that list. That's just kind of what happened. I mean, I see it all the time too. In my videos, every time it's like, hey, when's Jet Grind Radio getting re-released? Because our first re-release sucked. When's the Xbox version going to become backwards compatible? Like, as if I know this.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I saw, that fan base is there and it's getting stronger.
Yeah, and the demand is getting
that one
getting pretty high too, man.
That one, I got to say good luck.
Yeah, I get it. It's the licensing of music. It's because they got a lot of the songs from the original, but not 100%.
So I'm gonna give some bad news to people. This is not a secret. This is just something that puts just two and two together here. A lot of the Dreamcast's most iconic things, most of its iconic games, Crazy Taxi is a great example of this.
Mm-hmm. The re-release.
The re-release doesn't have Offspring in it.
I know
it doesn't have a lot of stuff like that in it. And the reason for this is a lot of Dreamcast games, because of the financial situation we're talking about, did a lot of corporate tie-ins. And those corporate tie-ins are coming back to bite them in the ass. Having music they didn't own, Crazy Taxi 2, you could drive to a KFC, a Fila store, and a couple others that are just like, these are, you can't.
Didn't Sonic Adventure had a DLC from a company that sponsored? I can't remember. It was like a competition.
Yeah, I believe it.
I just can't remember, but it was advertised by a major company. I just can't remember. Yeah. It was so long ago.
By the way, he just subtly dropped something I was going to mention, which is, do you guys know the Dreamcast at DLC?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, back to that point, though. I mean, that has come to hit them hard in a lot of Dreamcast games. And Shenmue was the same thing. Like, it had all sorts of corporate tie-ins, all of which are replaced by the word Sega now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, one more thing.
Shoot.
Do you see Sega releasing a mini Sega Dreamcast?
No.
At all?
No.
Zero.
Well, all right. So they are doing a Genesis Classic thing.
Yeah.
I can't imagine they would do a Dreamcast Classic, but
I think they are, but that's just me.
You believe what you want. I think it would all be completely and utterly dependent upon the Genesis being successful, but I don't.
Okay, let's say they do.
Sure.
How many games do you think it should, like, you know, Super Nintendo, it will have, it has, what, 22? Is it 20, 22? And they will have, like, an unreleased game.
If you're giving me, like, the fantasy power of that.
Yeah, fantasy, yeah.
Fantasy power. Yeah. I'm going to say the primary reason you're not getting one is because of the technology behind it. Like, I mean, okay. It's really easy to replicate NES and SNES. I mean, even Nintendo struggles with N64, which is part of the reason you're not getting that. Yeah. Dreamcast is different.
Yeah.
We're not ready. But let's pretend we were.
Yeah.
I would sit there and say, yeah, you probably need like 20, 25 games, something like that.
So which one you would put there?
That's actually a tough call because obviously first two I would put on is Shenmue.
I think they should put never released in the US, Shenmue 2, whatever. Like
that. Oh yeah, you could do that.
But I mean, they'll have that came out for the original Xbox. But yeah,
it did. But that. I mean, there's a whole bunch. If you're asking just for some randoms, Crazy Taxi 1 and 2, Sonic Adventure 1 and 2, Power Stone 1 and 2.
Yeah.
A lot of Capcom stuff. The Resident Evil games that they made.
Code Veronica was really awesome.
Code Veronica was made for Dreamcast. And actually, funny thing about that one, Code Veronica was originally Resident Evil 3. And Resident Evil 3 Nemesis was originally just Resident Evil Nemesis. And then they realized they had some deal with Sony where they had to have the third one. They just swapped.
That's smart. It. I didn't know that.
Yeah, now you do. I didn't know that. Because at that point, Capcom was all gung-ho about the Dreamcast. And they're like, all right, we still have to do under this deal. And Nemesis is now
three, Ready to Rumble?
Ready to Rumble, sure.
Soul Calibur, I think would be
essential.
Phantasy Star Online,
Yeah, Phantasy Star. That would be harder because you'd have to actually have online support for it. Yeah, but it's not impossible.
Yeah.
Choo Choo Rocket, I would put on there.
Man, this should re-release. That's a game.
Choo Choo Rocket needs to come.
They had it for the iPad.
And Game Boy Advance.
You're right. I forgot about the Game Boy Advance version. That game was awesome. It was good.
Unrelated, there's kind of a Sega CD version.
Really?
Yeah.
Choo Choo Rocket?
It's not called Choo Choo Rocket, but it is a ROM hack of the Game Boy Advance version with a different name on. I can get you the name after this because I don't remember it offhand.
Okay.
But this one company called Good Deal Games published their own Sega CD version of that game. And it runs right on your Sega CD.
Oh, I just remember now. It just popped up right now.
Sure.
It's not a Sega Dreamcast question. The return of Streets of Rage.
Oh, yeah.
Streets of Rage 3. Now, I'm excited, but I'm also worried.
Sure.
The reason why I love 1 and 2. It's not Streets of Rage 3. It's Streets of Rage 4.
Yeah.
The reason why I love 1 and 2, besides the gameplay, is the soundtrack. It was so freaking
Tommy
awesome.
Tommy Tallarico, right?
No, not Tommy Tallarico.
He's not the guy who did that?
No. It was, I forgot his name.
Music's not my field.
Well, but... It was, he used to work for Sega back then. 3 was a different person that worked on it. Kind of sucked. The game looks awesome, right? And they, it's similar to like part 1. I'm a little bit worried they never talk about the music because that's the thing that stood out to me about Streets of Rage was the music.
I have the first two on vinyl.
It's so good. Oh, it is. If we're like, yo, this is a 16-bit era, and it sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, like that soundtrack is to me like Jet Set Radio, how it is, you know, like that, like it's so iconic, you know. So I'm a little bit worried about the music, man. Like it graphically looks beautiful, but how the music is in the sound, they haven't chilled anything.
I have no insight to that, which is unfortunate because I knew that game was coming out for like 6 months before it was announced.
Really? Yeah. Wait,
they just told me. I was like, okay, all right, cool. But I didn't tell anybody because I was like, I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know nothing about the music. But you're right. That is a valid concern.
It didn't dawn on me
until now. You're right.
That's been quiet. I don't know. Is it coming out this year? 2019?
I don't remember the release.
Because they've been quiet.
Probably 2019, I think.
Yeah.
I think that game is another situation kind of like Sonic Mania. You know the story of Sonic Mania? Got made? Sonic Mania was that 2D one that came out like a year ago.
Yes, everyone
really liked.
Yeah, I got that for the Switch.
All right, yeah, okay. So that game, you know how it got made?
No.
So the story behind that one is really weird. So do you remember, almost nobody remembers this, Sonic the Hedgehog 4 Part 2. Do you remember that game?
No.
Nobody does. It was this digital PS3 and Xbox 360 release. The same day that came out by Sega, this fan-made Sonic game came out for the PC, and it was infinitely better, to the point where everyone was going and getting that game and saying, screw Sega's actual game.
Really? Okay.
And so Sega's publicly, this is not a secret, this isn't NDA crap, like this is all known, what they did was they said, hey, you got to stop, cease and desist, stop. Secretly, they hired him.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And
he came
in and he made Sonic Mania over the course of like 7 years. I'm pretty sure Streets of Rage 4 is kind of the same deal. And it's just a love letter. So my guess is you'll probably get the music you like.
I hope so.
I think they know.
Yeah. Well, you want to mention your YouTube channel?
Sure,
check it out.
The channel where you can hear me wax inane about this type of thing is my own. Is youtube.com/AdamKorlick, K-O-R-A-L-I-K. Same thing across Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff.
Cool, man. No, thanks for the chat, man. No,
thank you for
everybody's like, oh, look at these old folks talking about Sega Dreamcast and all that, you know. don't you feel old, man?
Yeah, of course
it's been so long, man. Yeah. Like all these Sega.
I'm 32 and I still feel like the oldest one in the room. Like I didn't want to feel. Man.
Yeah, but look at every time I see him, he's rocking something Sega shirt, Sega hoodie, something, man. So that's cool, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll see you in the next event, I guess, right?
Hopefully.
All right, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.